Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mom, can you drive me to the donut shop tomorrow at 4 p.m.? 13-year-old Kelly stuck her head around the kitchen doorway. What's going on? Asked her mom, checking the family calendar on the fridge. Oh, nothing. I'm just meeting someone.
Oh? Who are you meeting?
Just someone. I've been chatting with him online, and we just thought it would be fun to meet.
What? Her mom nearly dropped the pot of spaghetti she was holding. You're meeting a stranger? You've got to be kidding, Kelly.
Mom, Kelly came into the room. Don't be so suspicious. He's not some pervert. He's my age, and he lives nearby.
Kelly's mom put down the pot and went over to face her daughter. How do you know he's your age and lives nearby? Kelly looked at her mother as though she had just lost all common sense.
I know because he told me. That's how.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about our children's safety on the Internet? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is very much in touch with this kind of issue. Laurie Lipper is the co-founder and president of the Children's Partnership, a leading national child advocacy organization. She's also the co-author of the award-winning Parents' Guide to the Information Superhighway, Rules and Tools for Families Online. Ms. Lipper, who lives in Washington, D.C., is also the parent of a very computer-savvy 10-year-old boy. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here today with you.
What is the most important thing for parents to know about kids' safety on the Internet?
Probably the most important thing is that the Internet and all of the new technologies are going to be a big part of our kids' lives. They already are. And that parents have a very, very important role in helping to guide their children as they enter this new digital era. Just to give your listeners a little sense of this, right now about 75% of all teens are already online. 92% of those are using email, and 75% are using technologies like instant messaging. So I think for parents it's really important to understand that it's here to stay, and the second part of that is we have a very important role to play for our kids.
Which is quite scary because a lot of us grew up in an era when there was no Internet, so we have to play catch-up pretty fast.
That's right, and I think parents have to realize never before in history has a technology like this been introduced so quickly. And we went back at the Children's Partnership and looked at history to see how parents had met the challenge of television, even vaudeville. And in each case, parents really struggled with what was good about it, what were the dangers. But the change or the difference with this medium is it came so quickly that our kids are far ahead of us in the technology. But the important thing to remember is parents still know more about life, what's right and wrong, what's safe and not safe, what's worth your time and what's not. And that's where our kids really need us to help steer them in this new environment.
And that's really reassuring for us because we are a little scared when we think how much more the kids know than we do in these technological areas.
Now that we know what the most important thing for parents to know is, which is very, very comforting, what is the most important thing for kids to know?
I think the most important thing, and sometimes the hardest thing for kids, is that the Internet is more like a big city than it is like a television set. Because it looks like a screen, kids think it's like a television. But I think the important thing for kids to know is this is a vast world with lots and lots of people and lots of information and materials. And just like a big city, some of it is wonderful, museums or schools or great places, parks for kids. But some of them are not good places for kids. Some are even dangerous. And sometimes, just like in a city, there are people who are not always thinking the best things for kids, and kids need to be aware of these dangers.
We've all heard the terrible tales of child molesters who somehow connect with kids through the Internet. How does that happen?
I think that gets to the heart of the Internet is really a communications medium as well as an information medium. And you can almost think of it, some parts of it, for example, chat rooms or some instant messaging and things, as like a giant party line where lots and lots of people, some people you know, some people you don't know, can all be on the same line together, so to speak, and also where there can be people there that you may not know are even listening in. And in an environment like that for kids, people have the chance to interact with our children in a way that we think they're safe because they're sitting here in our family room, but they're really being able to interact with a vast number of people that we don't know. And that's really where some of the the risk comes from the internet.
So it's information they can get, vocabulary they can be exposed to, perspectives that may not be something that we'd like them to be introduced to at certain ages, all those kinds of dangers.
There's maybe two ways to look at it. One is those kinds of things, information, hate sites, for example. Obviously, pornography has been a great concern. So there are a lot of sites and a lot of information online that are inappropriate and can be very scary to kids. The second set of dangers is more of the predators, people who are trolling the internet looking for kids. And that's in more of the communication side of things. That would be through chat rooms or possibly through an instant messaging.
I thought a chat room was you click on and you're talking to a person. I didn't realize a whole bunch of other people could be in the same chat room.
Yeah, let me give you a little sense of how it might work. For a lot of kids, you know, it can be around subjects that they're interested in. For example, Japanese animation, pop stars, fashion, even you know any subject. There's chat rooms online that a kid might find out about and want to participate in. And I think the important thing for parents to teach their kids is that as they're talking, just as your story in the beginning showed, people can say they're someone and not really be that person. Mm-hmm. And I have a little story maybe I could share. Mm-hmm. This is on a website called wiredkids.org, and there are many great websites for parents, which I know we'll get to. And this was the story of a young woman who loved baseball. So she was on a regular chat room with lots of kids around the country talking about baseball. And she had been told by her parents to never give out any of her personal information, never her name or her town, so that anyone could track her down. But over a series of months, she started talking to someone who said he was a boy in Virginia, a 10-year-old boy who also played baseball. And she told him her position. She told him that her team was in the playoffs. She, over time, just accidentally, she'd say, I have to go now, my game's at 4. I have to go now, my game's at 6. Or I have to go now because my mom's picking me up there. Just little bits of information. And the end of the story is that one day she came home and there was a man sitting in her living room. And it turned out he was a state policeman. But he showed her that just by those little pieces of information, he was able to trace back to what town had teams with that name, what was her position on the team, and he was actually able to go to her game and find her. Mm. So I think that's the kind of information that parents don't realize. It's innocent, and this is a child who already did know the rules of not giving out her specific names.
So was the policeman the person she had been talking to
yes,
all the time?
Yes, he had been talking to the policeman, and he did this as a way of educating her and showing her family, and then the story has become sort of mm-hmm. on the net as a way to help parents see what do you mean by not telling personal information. It can be any of these details. So I'd say that the first thing on when you were asking about child molesters, and that's often one of the concerns for parents, is to teach your kids to not give out any personal information. And whenever possible, there are ways to use buddy lists where you can control the number of people you're talking to and limit it to people that you know. And to set up things like that so your child is in a little bit more of a contained environment online.
So it means we need to learn how to use that stuff to sit down with our kids.
And here's a really good tip. This is one of my favorites. Ask your kids to show you. This is a great chance, and they love the opportunity to show off for their parents. And this is where my son has really been wonderful for us, because if we're not sure of something, it's often he's the one who will know how to get online or how to find something or how to show a piece of software and how it works. And allowing him to take the lead, and then we will often say, well, this site doesn't seem quite what it meant to be, or I'm not sure. Look at all of these links that are from this site. Let's check them out, and then I think let's make that a rule that we're not going to go to those links. It's been a really wonderful way to do it together.
So we just have to get over our embarrassment about being dumb at the beginning.
Use it to your advantage. Use that parent trick of make it a strength.
It's a very good skill.
Yeah. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about kids' safety on the Internet.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking today with Laurie Lipper about children's safety on the Internet. It's so interesting that we're talking about all these developments, and yet with all the technology, there really is no protection for kids, with the exception of the buddy list and some of that. Is that correct?
No, I'd say there's three levels of protection. The first is really good parenting, and I just want to remind parents, if you ask a parent, how can you protect your child from traffic accidents, almost any parent can say to you, well, I've taught them street safety. I've taught them how to cross or how to look both ways or how to look in a driver's eyes to make sure whether they're going to go or not. And if you ask about phone safety, how can a child be safe if someone's calling? Parents teach their kids, don't answer the phone, you know, if you're home alone, or make sure not to let a stranger know if you're there by yourself. It's very similar. The parents can learn the rules of the road in internet safety and teach their kids. The second thing is there are some common sense rules, such as keeping the computer in a common room where you can see what's going on, that can really help parents even when you're still learning it yourself. There's ways that you can help monitor it. And lastly, there are a lot of software options. There are ways that you can put blocking and filtering on your computer if you would like to do that. You can even find some of the internet service providers like AOL or, you know, Microsoft or others have very developed parent control devices. And there are some websites, again, that I can give you where parents can go and see what's available to them, and it will address it directly what they're worried about.
So it's really crucial that we take a stand and learn how to do this.
And learn how to do it and do it with your kids. Don't worry about knowing the technology. Remember, you know more than your kids do about life. That's what is important.
Can you give us some of the pointers for safe surfing for kids?
Yes, I would start with the number one pointer is, for as long as possible, keep the computer in a public area in your home, in a family room, in a place where you're walking back and forth, where you can look over your child's shoulder, where you can chat as they're online, where you can talk to them. That is probably the single best method, because they know that you're watching and you can feel if something goes wrong, you'll be right there to help them. The second thing, of course, is talk to your kids, as we've been saying. Probably the next thing is to learn yourself what some of the dangers are and teach them rules like privacy, not to give out any of their personal information, not to ever sign up for forms or surveys online without your permission. Those kinds of things are very important. And then some of the websites, you can look and see what tools you can use in your home to protect your kids online. And lastly, I was just going to let you know about something new we're hearing about, sort of peer circles, where parents are getting together, and I've heard of this a little bit, where a group of teenage girls will want to chat with each other even while they're doing their homework. So what I'm hearing about is parents getting together and saying, we're all going to agree that no one will be online between 8 and 10, let's say. And that because, of course, as we all know, the biggest fear the child has is missing something. Mm-hmm. And if you can find a few parents to share similar rules, we're finding that that's the way parents are getting around this. And then the kids will go along because you've set up a new peer context for them. It's tough, but that's one thing we're hearing now.
That's a wonderful idea, because one of the things that Linda and I are always touting is the idea that kids have peer groups, parents need peer groups, and we really need to know what our kids are doing with their friends. And if we can connect with the parents of the friends, then the old business about everybody's doing it, Mom, is thrown out the window.
I couldn't agree more. And I think particularly in the area of media, I'm seeing where there just seems to be no rules and there's just so much that parents are concerned about. If you can find a small group of parents who agree to the rules, and then the kids seem to settle right in, or at least after the first round or two.
What about guidelines for computer use in general? Do you find that kids who spend the most time in front of their computers are the most safety savvy, or those are the most sort of out of it socially, or what happens?
That can go either way. I think the rules for parents is to start with the child, not the computer. And as we all know, the good rules of parenting is to make sure your child's doing all right in school, has lots of friends, plays outside and has a lot of exercise and has other interests besides just the computer. I think when a child's only interest is being online for hours and hours by themselves, that's when I think a red flag should go up for a parent. So the first thing is to start with the child and try and keep them with lots of other things in their lives, and computers and the internet just a piece of that. One of the tools for parents that is useful at any age and that are easily available are contracts. And these are a little set of rules, and there's ones for younger children, and it's especially helpful for teens, because as we know, teens are a little more independent, and they're going to not be as amenable to having you look over their shoulder. And these contracts sort of set out what are the rules, how much time, what sites can you go to, and even to talk a little bit about what happens if you go somewhere a child accidentally were to run into something that was bad, you know, inappropriate for them. And to review these rules with your child periodically. These kinds of contracts are available in the Parents Guide to the Information Superhighway, the guide that partner and I wrote. And they're also available at some of the websites, which I can give you. It's a very commonly used technique, and I would really encourage parents. It's a great way, too, for parents to walk through both what are the dangers and what are the solutions. One of the most important points I would say for parents, especially for the teens, is to not blame a child when they come to you with something that they found that may be inappropriate. And, of course, our first impulse would be, stop. If you're doing that, if you've gotten there, you know, we're going to cut back your internet time. And I think it's very important that to encourage a child the first time they come to you to say, I ended up in the site, because it's very easy to inadvertently stumble into a bad site. Can I give you an example?
Mm-hmm.
For example, the site whitehouse.gov is the website for the National White House. But whitehouse.com is a pornography website.
Oh, my goodness.
So very easily, a child doing a very legitimate project on the White House could inadvertently end up in a site that is completely inappropriate, even from the first page. So I think the key is to help kids and say, thank you for bringing that to my attention. Let's see why this is not a good site for you, and then push the back button to get out of it.
So the key is how fortunate you are if your child does come to you and say, look what happened, I found this by accident. The problem is when they don't come to tell you and they just keep
Exactly. And if you, as we all know, if you want your kids to keep coming to you, you do need to know that they'll occasionally run into situations that, you know, we wish they wouldn't.
It's that whole technique of not being judgmental when you're dealing with them. It's hard. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about kids' safety on the Internet.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking today with Laurie Lipper about children's safety on the Internet.
Are there some things parents of teens should be aware of that are specific to teens?
Well, teens, of course, are more independent, and some of the experts point out that the Internet is also a place where you can try on different identities. And that, of course, is at the time of life in a natural way that teens are trying on different identities, and that many people think is an advantage and an opportunity for teens, but from a parent's point of view, it can also be a little scary and a little risky. So I think it just means that parents have to be attentive. I think the best things for teens is to keep talking to your kids, and you can monitor where they've gone. There's ways to check on the computer to see what they're doing. But it seems that for most teens, it's a question of keeping talking to them, knowing their friends, knowing their peers, and trying to make sure that they don't seem to be headed in a bad direction.
And that's very hard, and that's important. But I think a lot of it involves probably staying up later than we would like to, because I would bet that an awful lot of that Internet traffic goes on pretty late at night with teens.
Yes, that's true. There are some wonderful websites maybe we could talk about. For example, there is one, safeteens.com, who's a wonderful writer, who talks a lot about the developmental stages of teens and what you can expect as normal behavior, and then how that plays out online and what parents can do about that. There's another wonderful site called besafeonline.org. I believe that's out of Britain. And there's British Isles are doing a lot to keep kids safe online. It's a wonderful site for parents on what to be aware of. Maybe another one is pbs.org. they have a parent section called Growing with Media. And it's all about, again, child development, what's normal, what's not, and what are some of the issues around these new technologies.
That sounds like that would be very helpful to parents of any age child.
That's right. The last one maybe to let you know is called getnetwise.org. This site is helpful because it's put together by all the internet companies, and it is all the products that are available. And they allow you to put in a little search, so you could say, I have a 14-year-old boy, and I'm worried about how much time is online and too much gaming, for example. And then they will pull down, and it will show you, here are several products that are looking at how you can set time limits or how you can monitor what games they're playing, etc. So it kind of helps you, instead of the vast sea of information, it helps you sort down to what kinds of tools are available for your specific concerns.
The only thing that we have heard with these kinds of parental controls for teens is that the teens who are really net savvy can get around these very easily.
I think that's very true. And what we've seen over and over is that often it's the old New Yorker cartoon, you know, where the parent asks the teen, can you help me set up these blocking devices?
Oh. Yeah, that's a real problem. But I guess maybe just like using the car,
yeah,
using the internet needs to be looked at as more of a privilege than a right.
Yes, I think that's right. In a lot of the contracts, I think one of the things you can do is set clear consequences so that if a teen is abusing either time privileges or doing things online that are inappropriate, to set consequences and then either take away the internet time or whatever would be the right punishment for your family. The other thing I think can be helpful to parents is schools, of course, have to have contracts and rules for internet use. As you know, almost every school in the country now has some internet access, and it's increasingly reaching classrooms.
Now, are these contracts between the individual kids and the teachers, or how does contracts work?
There's all kinds of ways schools are handling this, but schools do need to have some rules and regulations. Some schools block all or filter all internet content coming in. And so what you can also do is talk to your school about what are their rules and regulations and consequences. So, for example, if kids are emailing each other pretending to be other kids, which is some of the things we're hearing from schools, and, you know, this used to happen with notes where you would mm-hmm. pretend to be someone or whatever, that the school has rules and consequences, and it's good for parents to know those so they can also help extend those to the home.
Laurie, what about little kids? We've talked about things parents can do in terms of taking charge of their teens and the computer, but what about the really little ones?
Well, little ones, parents really have an advantage. For the beginners, usually parents are just better readers, and so a lot of time having a kid right in your lap or side by side, you can think of fun things to do, Halloween sites, you know, or holiday sites. There's wonderful museums, or if your child's interested in bugs, or I know we once looked up killer bees and spent a lot of time on the internet together looking at that. And the parent, because they are the reader, can, you know, guide the child and introduce them to the medium. For a slightly more independent, like 10, 11, 12-year-olds, I think that's where really sitting down and talking about the rules, talking about the children's contract that's in the parent's guide to the information superhighway and other places really helps guide them and to set certain limits, like you go to certain sites and then after that not be able to click through to additional sites without parental permission. If you have a little one, you kind of have an advantage because you can train them. You have a few years to help bring them up in this medium. And then hopefully when you hit the teen years where they're naturally more independent, you've grounded them in some good rules.
Well, you have helped us so much, all of us out here in this vast wasteland who are worried about internet use and children's safety. So thank you so much for coming, Laurie Lipper.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of The Parent's Guide to the Information Superhighway, Rules and Tools for Families Online. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 179. Tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, our books are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.